Welcome back to the Stoplight Approach podcast, where brain science is made simple. I am your host, Sarah Ganger. And today on the podcast, we are going to be discussing chapter 7 from the book Signals. And this chapter is on parenting and relationship boundaries and connection. And here to discuss chapter 7 with me is my husband, Tim. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
I'm really glad you're here. This chapter was so interesting because it reminded me so much. I kind of had so many feelings bubble up from when we first kind of were introduced to the science behind Stoplight, when we were first introduced to the approach. And really those feelings kind of were summarized in a sentence that was kind of buried in the middle of this chapter. But she acknowledges in this chapter that she's not, you know, espousing a weak or permissive approach to parenting. And, you know, kind of what we've been discussing up until now, you know, this Stoplight approach, this sort of brain-based approach to parenting, for those of us, including you and I, who were raised in a more authoritarian approach, like it can feel permissive. And so I was just going to see if you could share your experience of like when you first kind of were exposed to Stoplight and that feeling of like this feels like permissiveness.
Yeah, I remember looking back. Part of this, I realized we've been doing this for a long time. Mm-hmm. And so Stoplight's been a pretty essential part of how we've parented for a long time. Our kids are teenagers now. And so that looking backwards, I think, made me realize, wow, yeah, like I was pretty unimpressed in some ways by Stoplight at the beginning because it did feel really permissive. And I think what I've realized over the years, like some of my reaction and kind of my, oh, this doesn't feel right, is what I really wanted in situations where I felt like wrong had been done, whether that was against me or whether it was one of our kids with against another child or something like that, is what I really wanted was my version of justice. And what I've realized is that my version of justice many times is I wanted some kind of punishment. Yeah, I wanted them to feel bad about what they had done. Mm. And for me to know that they felt really bad, mm-hmm, about what they had done as well. And so to do things like the Stoplight Starts With Me. And to do things like pause or potentially even walk away from a situation felt like I wasn't actually handling the situation. Mm. And that felt, even in the situation, especially when we first started, really permissive. Like, am I letting them get away with something? Aren't I supposed to immediately respond in the situation? Isn't the most important thing immediately saying that this is wrong so that they associate their direct action being right or wrong?
Yeah.
And so having a time delay between things felt really weird. Felt like I was being a bad parent.
Yeah, and it is crazy because now looking back, like I can say, okay, because I'm the same, like in the sense, like it felt like this needs to be taken care of immediately. Right now, I have to take care of this situation. And, you know, for me, like you know, that looked like handing out a punishment and shutting it down and making sure this child knew this is not okay. And now, like, that I have been trained in this for many years and been practicing it very imperfectly for very, very many years, like, what I realize is, like, all of that was just for me. Like, I thought it was for them. Like, I thought that, okay, yeah, they're going to learn this right now, right here, you know? But actually, like, it was for me because, like, in my body, in my, like, emotions and sense of justice or what needed to be done, like, I'm going to take care of this because I want to be in charge of it and in control of it. Mm-hmm. And And so what I kind of thought at the time was for them actually was for me, because, you know, this is just not how this is done. And I'm going to just make sure this doesn't happen mm-hmm. again. And so kind of this long, very long journey, years long journey of learning, like, no, actually, like, that's not helpful, because that's not how children learn. That's not how I learn. That's not how any human learns. And so learning to pause and learning to take that step back has been incredibly counterintuitive, and did feel a lot like permissiveness at first. But now I realize, no, actually, like, it's the most useful tool in training and kind of equipping and building up, which is what this chapter is about, like the difference between discipline and punishment, which again, to me, you know, the way I was raised plus the way we were trained when we were first parented or when we were first becoming parents and learning to parent children, all the books we read, all of the speakers that we listened to, most of the advice that we got was from a punishment perspective. And that fit in with the way I was raised. So I thought, yeah, that sounds right to me, because I didn't know anything else. And so I will never forget the first time I heard someone make a distinction between discipline and punishment. And we were at a conference for people who were wanting to become foster parents or who were in the adoption process. And there was a adoptive mom who was giving this talk, and she was talking about discipline. And I thought, I need to go to that session for sure. You know, like, I need some help with this. And so she, you know, and I was kind of expecting like tips or tricks or tools or like all these different things. And she 100% talked about the root of the word discipline, which is disciple, which means to teach. And then she talked about like how if her part of her job as a mom, as a parent, is to discipline her children, then she needs to be a really good teacher. And so it was 100% like on her, like she was saying, okay, like how am I as a teacher, like how am I delivering these lessons in a way that will help my child to learn them? Like if being a disciplinarian mm-hmm. is being a teacher ultimately, then like what kind of teacher am I? Mm-hmm. And I just remember being absolutely blown away. I had never heard anything like that before. To me, before that moment, discipline and punishment were the same thing, 100%. And, and it was just amazing to me that this woman was like, no, it's not about controlling your child with punishments, controlling their responses or whatever by punishing them. It's about teaching them and training them and helping them learn what they need to learn in order to relate well to everyone around them. So that was kind of my first exposure to like discipline versus punishment. What about you? Do you have any like kind of memories or things that stood out to you from the chapter, or just from, you know, kind of your life as you've been learning this, the difference between discipline and punishment?
Yeah. I think part of it is I didn't realize how much I use those two words synonymously. Yeah. And so I never really thought about separating them apart from one another, because to discipline was to give punishment. I guess I also think about being in school, and when you did something wrong in school, you didn't get... You got discipline, which was a punishment, you know? In other words, you know, you were passing a note to a friend, you were talking in class, you're doing whatever. Well, then you got detention. You had to go stay after late to talk to the teacher. You know, there was something that happened always, and it was always negative. Mm-hmm. It was always a negative thing. And so I think that I just looked at them really as the same thing. And so all of a sudden to have them pulled apart and more nuanced as what are these things. Are they actually the same thing? Or are they two different things? That was really mind-blowing to me, especially when we start to look at, well, what is discipline? Mm-hmm. Okay, well, what is punishment? And all of a sudden kind of realizing, ooh. I know for me it was like when I was like, oh my gosh, like I've never really thought about this as a teaching tool. Mm-hmm. Outside of don't do that again. And that was the end goal. Mm-hmm. Here's what's right. Here's what's wrong. Don't do the wrong thing.
Yeah.
And then hopefully you learn that lesson.
Yeah.
Move on to the next thing. And I'll say this, whether I was the one doing the disciplining or I was just observing it. And so, I was a pretty good kid. I was a pretty good student. So I didn't get discipline or punishment a whole lot when I was growing up. But being in school, I saw it happen a lot.
Yeah.
And so even in that way, just kind of realizing that really molds you into having this understanding. And I think seeing with Stoplight is really peeling back that layer and saying, let's really think about this. And wow.
Yeah.
In some ways, I kind of look back and be like, I can't believe how wrong I was about this when I would have been so firmly entrenched and said, oh, I know that I'm right.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, one thing you said, like that, you know, what something you quote, and I'm using air quotes here. No one can see me, but you can see me.
I can see you. They're definitely air quotes.
Air quotes. And so what I'm like, quote unquote, like what you quote unquote learned from punishment was don't do that again. And I feel like that really encapsulates punishment. Like she talks about how punishment focuses on the past. So your past action, don't do that. Don't do that again. Look what you did. Don't do it again. Whereas discipline focuses on the future. Like, this is what I want this to look like in the future. This is how it can be done differently. This is a better way to go about this. Like, it's actually training and teaching for future skills, for this situation in the future. This is how this can look. So I thought that was really, really important. Was there like another kind of difference between discipline and punishment that stuck out to you?
Yeah, one that I think didn't necessarily really stick out to me, I think, when we first started really putting this into practice. But now that we've been doing this for a number of years and our kids are older, one of the things that I think really struck me was the idea that the way that we parent them is going to be a future predictor of how they're going to interact with us. So in other words, if we're coming down in terms of punishment, fear, I'm afraid of dad or mom because of this, or maybe I'm ashamed of, mm-hmm. of myself, and I'm just a terrible person, a terrible kid, that's going to really, really profoundly impact them later in life. Mm-hmm. I think especially when our kids are small, we feel like we have lots of time to repair things and they're really dependent upon us. But the reality is all those little kids are going to get older. And so the way that we parent, the way that we engage with our children is really setting a precedent for how they're going to interact with us when they get older. And so if they look at us and they're afraid of us or we've shamed them, then all of a sudden we're not very safe people to open up to. And I think especially in terms of the teenage years and the preteen years, those are times when our kids are even more desperate to have safe people around them because it feels like their world is up in the air. They're dealing with situations they've never dealt with before, with peer pressure and social media and a significantly higher level of responsibility, whether that's at school or at home. And they're just encountering different ways of thinking and different ways of dealing with things. And what they really need is they really need to have safe parents who they've seen be people who are for them and want good things for them and want to help train and grow them so they can say, gosh, I need those people. I need my mom and dad because, man, this world is tough.
Yeah.
And I need their their understanding and their safety to kind of be involved in this world and make mistakes and know that's okay, rather than I'm terrified of really telling them the truth because I don't know how they're going to react to something. And I think what I've realized is that it's really easy to kind of damage your future self, your future parenting, while our kids are still young.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, like, if you think about punishment, often, not always, but often it can be a pretty effective tool, especially when our kids are young. You know, like, it's, you know, punishment, like, it can get you the results that you want. You know, if what you're looking for is just a really well-behaved kid, you know, often punishment does work. But I think what you're saying is so important is that, like, it's just a short term. Like, it's only going to work in the short term. And if what you want in the long term is a safe, connected relationship where your children know you can they can come to you with any problem that they have and that you are on their team and that you will help them kind of, like, solve the problem and figure out a solution, that doesn't come from that short term, like, getting the result that you want as far as behavior. That comes from this, like, long view of I'm going to keep on being safe. I'm going to keep on training and teaching and coming alongside and coaching and helping and correcting in a loving, kind, gentle, patient way so that I'm establishing safety. So that when those, like, bigger problems come later on, I'm a safe person to come to. And I've established that foundation of trust. And so, I think that, you know, it's important when we're kind of looking at these, like, to take that long view. She does talk a little bit about the difference between punishment and rewards. So some parents maybe realize that, okay, maybe I'm not going to use punishment anymore, but so I'm going to use rewards for positive behavior. And I think she does a good job of laying out the fact that, you know, it's really just two sides of the same coin, punishment and rewards. Like, really what's happening is something external from the outside is being put upon the child to motivate them to act a certain way. So whether that's something negative in punishment is being put upon, or whether that's something positive in rewards, but either way, something external is being put upon the child to sort of motivate them. And scientists have a fancy word for that. It's called extrinsic motivation. Something external is motivating you. And she contrasts that with what scientists call intrinsic motivation, which is, this is coming from inside of me. Like, I want to do the right thing because this is the type of person I am. Or I want to do the right thing because this is kind of how my people do this. My family, or, you know, my church community or my classroom, whatever my sort of group identity that I identify with. Like, my people do it this way. You know, my people are kind, or my people are caring, or my people are gentle, or whatever. And she's going to talk a little bit more about that sort of identity piece later on. So we're not going to talk a lot about that right now. One thing that I did want to ask you about is her whole section on nonverbal communication. She just has a really clear data that she's outlined about the importance of nonverbal communication and how much of our communication is nonverbal. It comes from facial expressions and body language and tone. And so I was just going to see if you, like, have a story or something that kind of, like, hit you when you kind of read that outline of how so much of our communication is nonverbal.
Yeah, I think I think what really struck me is, like, I'm a person who for most of my life has made a living with my words. I that's what I do. I speak and teach and do all these kinds of things. And so I come from a background where words are really, really important. Yeah. And yet, And yet, when you look at the actual data, in comparison to body language and tone, expression, is such a small part of what we're actually communicating. And I think that I feel like I've seen these numbers before, but it's like every time I see them, they just repeatedly blow me away. Mm. Because I forget how important those things are, is that we can say all the right words, and yet if my facial expression is angry, it does not matter what those words are. What's being communicated is anger. Mm-hmm. And those things are so important. And I think that it goes back to the stoplight starts with me, because the reality is if I am in yellow or if I am in red, I could memorize a script and say all the right words. That yellow and red is still going to absolutely come through. Mm-hmm. And it's just a good reminder that we're communicating so much mm-hmm. through our facial expression, through the way that we say things. And we need to be so aware of that. And the reality is, and this is something that's I think helpful for me, is I've not always been aware of what my face has been saying. Mm-hmm. And to have someone who loves me and cares about me, many times that's been you, but sometimes it's been my children. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's been someone else asked me those questions. Are you mad right now? Mm-hmm. Or you look really stressed. Are you okay? And the answer most of the time is yeah, but I've thought I've been masking it. And so asking then, what about me makes you think that? Mm-hmm. And now that's a very green brain thing to say, mm-hmm. asking. But then all of a sudden it's so helpful, because what you start to realize is, oh, I have this face that I put on, or I do this action that is communicating this. And what that allows us to really do then is say, okay, I'm learning a lot about myself and what I do. And so that helps me to say, okay, if I can look in the mirror and say, do I look like a person who's ready to actually now go and engage with my child?
Yeah.
Or do I look like a person who's still really mad? Then that all of a sudden gives me a way to even help myself be in a place to go and work towards that discipline. Doing that teaching and doing those things. And so I think just once again, are words important? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. They're absolutely important. But so is all of the other things. And even to a degree that all the other things mm-hmm. Are even in many ways more important than the words that we choose to say. So I think it's really coming in and having a way more holistic approach to what we're doing in terms of discipline, not only in reference to our words.
Yeah. The one thing that really stuck out to me from that whole like kind of nonverbal communication piece was, she talks about like active listening, making eye contact, asking kind of open-ended questions, and once again, like, and we've talked about this on the podcast before, but she mentions like putting your phone down, and so if you part of that nonverbal communication is, are you staring at your phone while you're listening to your kid? Because if you are, then what you're communicating is, this isn't, what you're saying is not very important. So even if you are listening and you respond appropriately with a yes or a no or a maybe or we'll see or, I'll sign your form or whatever they're asking for, what you're communicating with your body language by not looking up and putting your phone down or closing your computer is, well, this isn't really very important, which of course, like, will be internalized as you're not very important. Yeah. And so it's, yes, it's definitely like the kind of like more frustrated or angry or even irritated or sarcastic tones, like 100%. But then it's also just sort of like the distractedness and the kind of listening with one ear and, you know, and I'm not saying, you know, we have to give our children 100% of our attention every single moment, but I am saying that like overall the posture and body language and facial expression and tone should be you matter, you're important, and I want to attend to what you're saying. And so like pulling in that piece was really important. She talks about with the discipline, like making sure that the relationship is first and that we're seeing the child first before we see the situation. And boy, is that hard sometimes, mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm. Especially when it's a situation that, which we've talked about it before, is a trigger for us. Yeah. And so often our mind and heart and brain go straight to the situation. And so looking at the child first is so important because it helps us keep the relationship first. Was there anything else that you wanted to share from this chapter?
I think that what I would share is that if this chapter for you was maybe a point where you, if you made it through some of the other sections that felt really new and really awkward, and you got to this section, you thought to yourself, done with this book. what I just encourage you to do is, one, is to say, hey, you're not alone in reaching that point. And one is, parenting is hard. Yeah. It's really hard. I mean, being a teacher with other students and you're the role model, you're the authority figure, it's hard. Like those things are difficult. I think what I'd like to say is yes, this is different. And yes, this is going to be hard because it's going to go against some of your instincts. But what I would encourage you to do is keep going. Mm. Keep looking at it. Keep thinking through it. And then try it. Mm. Try it. And I just think of one of the things that we've done so often, especially when our kids were younger, is doing redos. Mm. Is that if our goal is to really train them, they know they did something wrong. But then actually making them go through and do it the right way, so powerful, because now it's not just don't do this again. It's, hey, let's model and work through what's right. Mm-hmm. Wow, that's a powerful thing to do. And then to encourage and say, hey, that was a great job that you did it that way. And so really allowing this process that, once again, holistically be at work, just keep going.
Yeah.
It's worth it on the journey.
Yeah, I think that's so important because, you know, there is a chapter coming where there's some really specific discipline strategies, lots of ones that you and I have used for a lot of years with our children. So, if you got to this chapter and you're like, okay, I'm not supposed to punish, but I don't have any idea what discipline looks like because I thought they were the same thing until 5 minutes ago when I started reading this chapter, just wait. It's coming. I promise there's a chapter coming that's all about like, what does this look like? And you're right. Like this is a journey. And so we have to keep going, and keep taking those steps. And so, as an invitation to kind of like be part of the journey, we wanted to kind of send out a call for questions. We are by no means experts. We get this wrong every single day and we try again the next day. But there's a few things we've learned along the way. And if there are any questions that you have, we're just about halfway through the book now. If you've been listening along with us, reading along with us and have some questions, we would love to at least try to answer them. And so you can email us at podcasts, that's podcasts with an S, so plural, podcasts@thestoplightapproach.org. So that's podcasts, S with an S, at thestoplightapproach.org. So yeah, send in those questions and we will do our best to answer them, and we will do our best to, just kind of help you along this journey, because we would really love to do that. We will be back next week talking about chapter 8. So hopefully you can join us then. And Tim, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Stoplight Approach podcast. Please share, subscribe, rate, and review this podcast, as it will help other people to find us. The Stoplight Approach offers many resources to help families, schools, churches, and other groups to grow in their understanding of the brain and relationships. Please visit www.thestoplightapproach.org to learn more.